Hey, we made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This podcast network. My name's Mark and I am your regular host, and alongside me for a rare appearance on a special episode is my co-host Kurt. Hello, Kurt.
Hello, rare indeed. Although I have been on a few now, I must admit. Yeah. You know, it's the ones I'm interested in.
Seems fine. The problem is I'm interested in literally everything. That's why I'm on all of them.
Yeah, well, to be fair, if I'm being honest, and as I said to you off air just before, that in the last, let's put it into context, when I spoke about this 2 or 3 days ago, so this is in the last 21 days, I've done 20 podcasts recordings in total. So when I
That's
actually,
a lot.
Yeah, when I actually spoke to the person about it, it was 18 days, I'd done 20. So this will be my 21st podcast in 21 days.
Bloody hell.
So, yeah. So I'm a busy man, which is why sometimes the specials, I'm a bit like, do you know what? If I had time, I would, but I don't really have time. But yeah.
You mean you don't want to make time to talk about the Red Dwarf AA adverts?
I can think of better things to do.
Well, it's a good job we're not talking about the AA adverts, isn't it? Although I'm sure we will. We are talking about Into the Gloop, which is a new script that is only about 3 weeks old, 4 weeks maybe, that was launched at Hollyhop. We did cover Hollyhop in more detail on a special a few weeks ago, so have a look at that if you haven't. But Into the Gloop, the script has been posted online as well, so people who didn't go to the Hollyhop convention can now at least read rather than experience the script, which I think is a really cool thing.
It is a really cool thing. Although I didn't know this, and I've made loads of like copious notes from the notes of that we made, you know, at the Hollyhop thing, thinking, oh, what happened there? What happened there? So I've gone, was that right? Was that right? And then about 20 minutes before we came online, I went, oh, the script's here. I could have made no notes. I could have like thrown my notes in the bin. I could have gone, right, was that the case? So I need to ask Mark that question. No, I don't, because the script is available to me. So
I mean, if it helps, I had made all of my notes before the script was put online. So we both ended up doing more work than we needed
to. Oh, yeah. We made notes at Hollyhop, didn't we? So that's what I mean. But it's kind of like for me to reread my notes, to go through it, to check, you know, what was that about? What was that about? How did that work? But then obviously, you know, as I say, I could have just gone, right, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to copy the script over and make some notes on that. So, but
we'll also put a link to the script so that people can download it onto our Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod on Twitter.
I think at some point we should maybe do a rereading of it personally.
We have got enough people.
We have.
We've got 5. And, you know, I'm childish enough to play Child Rimmer, but I'll be damned if I'm not playing the fucking cat. God, that's such a stupid idea. Shall we do it?
It's certainly worth asking the other guys. It doesn't necessarily have to be this script, but this one's the shortest one, isn't it? So it could be Gunman of the Apocalypse or anything. It could be any script, really.
Park that thought.
Parking it.
But if you like the idea, let us know on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod. So it was first broadcast on the 7th of February 2021, live at the Hollyhop convention online, with a new cast of 6 playing various characters from Red Dwarf. Ed Bye played the narrator. Harmony Hewlett played Rimmer. Raff Clarkson played Lister. Nicola Skalova played Cat. Ellie Griffiths played Crichton. And Loic Beaucherel played Young Rimmer. It was written by Rob Grant, produced by Paul Jackson, and directed by Ed Bye. And not on the credits itself, but I also think an unsung hero, who I don't know which person it was, but there was someone kind of working backstage from the Red Dwarf fan club, bringing in the screens of the different actors on and off. Really, really slick, I thought. And they weren't credited. So whoever did that, good job.
Yeah, we talked about the Holly Hop thing during the last talk about how smooth it was. There was only a few hiccups. There was one minor one at the beginning when they first started to introduce them. But that's just one of those things that happens in live. You know what I mean?
And restarted it and they handled it really, really well.
Yeah, it was solved within seconds. You know, it was solved before they even realised it was solved, which was good.
Yeah.
And then they just went, well, okay, we'll just start from this sentence and move on. And I thought it was really done professional. And to be fair, you know, the actors as well, that could have thrown them, and it didn't. So, you know, that was brilliant from all aspects, including the people behind the scenes.
Mm. So it was a roughly 15-minute audio adventure with the on-screen actors being like an addition. They'd all kind of cosplayed up to the characters that they were playing, which was Ace. But it could have worked as well with just audio, I thought.
Yeah.
And it's set immediately after Series 6, Episode 6, where our heroes get blown to smithereens by their evil future selves. And that was never resolved.
No.
And it's still not resolved. Good.
Yeah. And the end of Season 8 still isn't resolved, but I won't go into the reasons. If they mention it in the new ones, but they do. At some point, that's all I'll say to you, Mark, because obviously you haven't seen them yet, but yeah, it'll be good when you get there. But yes, it is good they haven't solved it.
Do you know, it's getting harder and harder. Doing this podcast, I just bloody love Red Dwarf. I really want to watch those series now, and I keep stopping myself, because I do quite like the idea of literally having it as my first watch. I think that will give it a dynamic that, you know, a new dynamic when we get there. But I really want to watch it.
I know.
I've seen pictures of them all looking like Crichton. I want to know how that happens.
Well, we might have to think of some way of doing it from a special where you can at least watch a couple, you know, before we get there. You know what I mean? Maybe a slow burn. Maybe let's start watching, you know, some of the Red Dwarf 10 or something eventually.
Maybe.
And, you know, I might have a party and I might have a, you know, when we can all go and come round to your house and have a drink. That would
be bloody lovely. Do you remember when we could go round to each other's houses?
Yeah, I remember being able to go outside, apparently, and, you know, meet people.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, let's get on with it. Let's talk about the script. So Ed Bye, the narrator, describes the aftermath of Out of Time. Starbug is hulked and the crew are dead. Holly has stopped working. In the Starbug cockpit, the consoles are on fire and only Rimmer, in his hard-like form, has survived. He is surveying the damage. Rimmer goes into Starbug's main area and finds a bazookoid. He decides that the only way to solve this problem is to destroy the time drive. But Rimmer being Rimmer, he fucks it up and only damages it. The energy wave spreads out and it causes multiple versions of Rimmer to appear. And then they all coagulate into one, and it's a woman.
So, during that, what I liked is some of the ideas that they've instilled in this, because it reads like a script that would be difficult to do, even to the point where, you know, it's not quite in the script at this point when you're talking, but when it says, this took me 30 seconds to type, it will cost Ed at least 3 days production days, planning, shooting and editing. And the way that Ed kind of like delivered that line was like, yeah, right, Rob, you know, whatever, as if to say, it will take longer than that. but the fact that the girder that falls on Rimmer, because he's hard, like, actually squashes him. And he slowly kind of opens as he's walking around.
Like a concertina.
Yeah, and he's slowly like opening up, which I thought was a brilliant, like, you know, visual, but how it would appear on screen, which is why I like this, because you can imagine it being more of an animated thing, more than a show, really. But it works as a descriptive kind of moment.
I think that's kind of a nod to where it was as well, is that Ed Bye, you know, he gets elbowed in the ribs by Rob Grant, and I don't know, I assume he'd read the script, he must have already read the script, but
yeah
I think the first time he received the script he was like, you shithead. I think that's, you know, it's a special thing for a very niche Red Dwarf obsessive audience. And that made me smile. Completely unnecessary, but
yeah,
I liked that. I did really like that. And I think you're right. It does seem to me that he allowed himself to be completely unshackled with special effects and all of that not being relevant because it was never going to be made for TV.
Yeah.
And I'm just putting it out there, comic book or cartoon version of this would be bloody brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think they'd even need to change, if the audio recording is good enough, I don't think they'd need to change anything.
No, yeah, you could use the original. Yeah, if they've got the recording, which they did, recorded the show, didn't they? So, definitely.
Yeah. I love how they found really dynamic and interesting and thematic ways to explain, not just well, but almost seamlessly, why half the cast have changed gender. I thought that was brilliant.
Mm.
It yeah. felt natural.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. And just as you say, the way that they describe it's described that Rimmer, when he changes, you mentioned about the seeing multiple versions of him, and it was like each was different, and the fact that it was like sort of amalgamating him to when he becomes her, you know, that it's in itself is a good descriptive way of describing how it happened, really.
And I know your obsession with the multiple versions of Rimmer. I bet this popped you.
It did, yeah. There's a couple. There's a couple in this 10-minute script. I know, there's nothing wrong with that. And then obviously there's like millions of them if you visualise it as well. So, yeah, I'm all happy with that.
So Rimmer returns to the cockpit and there are alternative versions of everybody else. Familiar characters in different bodies. Crichton and Kat are women. Only Lister remains male, but he doesn't look the same either. They begin to try and figure out what's happening. And at this point, within seconds, I felt like everybody hit the spirit of the role that they'd been given.
Absolutely, yeah. They're all outstanding. They were. It's, you know, and especially because the woman who plays Crichton, who is, what's her name again? Ellie Griffiths, just had the accent down perfectly, but also but each of them had their own individual kind of style. Because obviously Lister's was just being Scouse, but as not being as Craig Charles. It was just more of a, like a...
Well, Raph's not from Liverpool, yeah, so that was an accent he was putting on. And until I found out that Raph wasn't from Liverpool, I had just assumed that he was from Liverpool.
Yeah, and just even the casting as well. You know, the fact that Nicola Skalova, you know, it's just having her as an Eastern cat makes complete sense. You know, and I think Rob Grant said that at the time as well. And it's just that she made complete sense. And just throughout on the script on this, throughout, Kat is just as you would expect Kat to be, and every single one has been written. And obviously it's Rob Grant, so he knows what he's doing. But through the page, you can hear, you can see it, but listening to it and seeing them perform it is two different things. And all of them landed it perfectly.
And that's the thing, this could have fallen completely flat on its face. It was brave by everybody involved.
Yeah.
The script is ace, the acting is ace, the interactions were spot on, and the combination of the script and the actors working together well was... It just felt really more immersive than I'd ever expected it to.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
Crichton has a theory and attempts to analyse the time machine. Rimmer's failure to destroy the machine completely has caused the anomaly that we now currently see. He has destroyed the unreality field, and they're trapped in an unreality, unable to return to the reality they're from, because they're dead. Unfortunately, said unreality is unstable, and suddenly everything goes a bit wonky, including the time machine itself turning into a Japanese panty vending machine. Oh, and Rimmer is male and 9 as well.
yeah. And the fact that he's read that in after the fact, when obviously he saw him sort of playing Rimmer and was like, we've got to write him into it, I thought was really good. A couple of things throughout the few bits that you've talked about there is the way that there's been various different aspects with, you know, Rimmer looking at his cleavage like we've had in the past. You know, yeah. there's like callbacks to that. You've got when they're talking about the unreality field, that Lister kind of gets quite aggressive, passive aggressive with, is like, it's an unreality field, Rimmy. It's such a smeghead kind of thing. You know, there's a continuation that you've messed up again kind of thing. You know, and as I say, it's the fact that Rimmer missed, the whole reason why this happened is because Rimmer fell over and missed, and this has caused this problem.
And botched it, yeah.
So it's, you know, when you actually read the script itself, and I really encourage people to do so, you do see that within the script. So we're not going to go over it step by step because we want you to read it, really, but it's it is really good that they capture that essence.
I feel like they get the dynamic of the crew at that specific period of time in Red Dwarf perfect.
Yeah.
But of course they did. It's Rob Grant. You know, it's not written by somebody who likes Red Dwarf. It's written by the guy.
Yeah,
you know.
But I'm also saying about the actors as well during the performance as well. That's, you know.
And Lister finally gets his head together and says that they'll solve it because they're the boys from the Dwarf. Like I say, got the vibe of Series 6.
Yeah, all girls.
The people from the Dwarf. It's not got the same ring, has it? And right, when you think about it, boys from the Dwarf, Holly was there and she was a girl.
Did Holly...
I count Holly as one of the boys from the Dwarf.
Yeah. If Holly wants to be that pronoun, then we're happy, aren't we?
No, she can do what she likes. Everybody can. Good.
Exactly.
Did you miss Holly here in the script?
I didn't really think about it, actually. Because one of the things that... I didn't have Holly in my notes, because you mentioned at the top that Holly wasn't there, and I don't... Was she not...
Ed Bye narrated that Holly was offline. And it was like one very quick line.
Okay, yeah, I missed it. It didn't enter my mind when I, on both watching it live and quickly going through it today. I didn't miss it, so.
I think at the time I was similar. I was like, no, that's fine. But now we're analysing it. I think I would have quite liked a little bit of Holly, just like a couple of lines. But it's still brilliant. And for the sake of a 15-minute thing, it doesn't need Holly. And the explanation, again, it all, in a very Red Dwarf way, made sense.
Yeah.
And Holly will come back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, Crichton has spotted a problem. Stars are disappearing at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
At this point, I'd like to point out that the script insisted that a 12-year-old boy called someone Rubber Johnny Bunce, which made me howl. And how in the world did this 12-year-old kid, who, you know, likes Red Dwarf but isn't an actor, how the hell did he not completely corpse when he got to call someone Rubber Johnny Bunce in front of 200 people online?
I don't know. I remember hearing that line at the time. I didn't realise, you know, just at the time, just thinking about it. You know, you think back and go, oh, God, yeah. But it is great. It is great. And
imagine being 12 and imagine getting to perform the line Rubber Johnny Bunce to a load of fucking nerds who loved you for it.
Yeah.
I mean, he was good and he deserved the part. And it was made specifically for this young man, Loic.
Yeah.
But 12-year-old me is spitting feathers. 42-year-old me is really pleased for him. But 12-year-old me, spitting feathers.
Well, he was the star of the show, wasn't he? Because I know we're not talking so much about anything after that happened afterwards, but, you know, he had some sass. He you know, he was asked direct questions, and he gave him pretty much direct answers as well. So, do you have any merchandise? Well, no. I says, I just watched the show. Things like that. It's just brilliant. He was brilliant.
He was sharp as a tack. And I don't think I was sharp as a tack at 12. I think I could just about do me fucking shoelaces. Maybe. Or maybe I had Velcro. Probably. So long ago. Anyway. Rimmer says he's claiming the only escape pod. And Cat hits the panty machine and it transforms back into the time machine, which is good. And Rimmer returns to being a woman. Crichton wants Cat to not hit the drive again and explains that they're in a fossilised universe, meaning that all matter is going to transform into grey gloop. Oh dear.
Is that bad?
I think so.
OK. Okay. I did like that. I do like repetitive humour.
Well, it's classic Red Dwarf, isn't it? And even in this tiny little script, they got very much the vibe of Red Dwarf, and the repetitive humour is so quintessentially Red Dwarf.
Yeah. And the way that Ellie delivers, I think it was it Ellie that delivered the line, Rimmer? It was Rimmer. I always get mixed up. I apologise.
Rimmer was played by Harmony.
Harmony, sorry. Yes, Harmony. Her last "Is that bad?" was perfect, because every single one was like, "Is that bad? Is that bad? Is that bad?" And then the last one was more like, "Is that bad?" Yeah, and just the change in the way that she delivered it was perfect. Yeah, and it just made so much sense that you would do that, because you're effectively finding out exactly what happens.
Yeah.
And, she would have, like, clocked on to the fact that it is bad now, but it was, like, one final time.
I think all of the people that played the parts, it is worth acknowledging that they weren't just given these parts. They had to send audition tapes, and they clearly took it seriously. And
yeah.
They clearly practiced, and, it was... Maybe I haven't been to enough conventions. Maybe this happens all the time, but I just don't think it does.
No, you wouldn't. I don't think in this medium. I mean, I would straight away say I haven't either. I've been to one, so it's not exactly known to me. But, and yes, they probably will have table reads and they will have various different things. But to be on a screen and not being there and actually having to act in front of, like, a screen and having that dividing wall, I've always said when I started playing music that people would say, how do you like sort of perform to like 700, 400, 200, 100 people? I said, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is playing to 3 or 4. It's horrific.
Exactly,
it's not good. So I think that, having the wall of a Zoom call, there and having to act, not knowing if people are hearing you, not knowing if people can see you, not seeing their reactions, not knowing if the tech is working, all of that instilled on it, and to be able to encourage the character to come out of them, I think that's really good. I mean, like Harmony had Rimmer down to a T. They all did. I'm not pointing out anyone in particular, but they all had strengths and weaknesses. For example, the fact that Crichton, that the accent was perfect, stuff like that. But each one played to the strengths, and it was, and I think from that point of view, the fact that you have that wall, and it broke through, it is great.
Yeah. My mind wandered on how this might have been done if it had been an episode of Red Dwarf. So
right.
I had a bit, I've been a bit down a rabbit hole, and I was thinking they could have probably got Susanna Burtish back, who played Arlene Rimmer, to play female.
Right. Yeah.
And, they had Terry Farrell play the cat in Red Dwarf USA.
Jerry Ryan.
Whatever, they're all the same.
No, you're right, you're right. It is Terry Farrell. You're right, it's me playing
up, I know,
because of a certain person got it wrong, not
but
you.
But they couldn't have Simon Gaffney to play young Grimmer because he'd have grown up.
Yeah, I suppose.
So you'd
have
had to have had Loic.
Yeah. So Loic was the only one dead cert then. The part was written for him. There's no other means other than the fact that the part was written for him.
Massive tangent, and you should probably tell me where to go because it's a spoiler. Does Arlene Rimmer ever come back?
No.
It is sad.
Yeah, but she doesn't know.
No. I also want to talk about the genderlessness of the characters before we carry on, seeing as I've gone down my rabbit hole. They explicitly had a call for gender and race blind castings of all these characters. And I'm pretty sure that Lister was not explicitly mixed race when they cast him. It was just that Craig Charles was great.
Yeah.
He got cast because he was good. They didn't want a black Lister. They didn't want a white Lister. They didn't want a mixed race Lister. They'd wanted a Lister, and Craig Charles was the best. So keeping it in the spirit of the show, but 30 years later as a kind of... I just feel like it's kind of like 2021 version of what their casting policy was in 1987. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, yeah, because we might have talked about this. I'm not sure if we have or not, but the more that I've thought about it, and obviously things happened in the last couple of years, which, you know, which have highlighted racism again, and, you know, yeah. the Black Lives Matter movement and stuff like that, that it's something that completely passed me by, because I don't think in those terms. It's not something I've ever thought about in those terms before.
No.
But thinking back to, like, Craig Charles being cast as the lead role, you know, it's just like, and I've thought about this quite a few times recently, it's just like, that is, in my own head, it's just like, I can't fathom that out now, because I'm thinking about it. Mm. And but it never ever crossed my mind to even think about it then, when I was growing up and watching the show. And it's only when I've started doing this podcast that, you know, I've had that second thought of, like, well, actually, you know, on the 3 million years thing, I think, and we might have talked about it then. I know you haven't listened to them, but because they talk about the casting of Craig Charles for that reason in that mold, really. And I think it's just, it goes a testament to the show, to the BBC, to everything that, you know, we've had, like, Red Dwarf as it is, and even, like, in a microcosm of what this is, that they weren't concerned about, you know, we need to get someone that can play a Lister or play a Rimmer. It's like, just be them characters, you know, in whatever role you want to be.
Yeah, I think it's... There were two jokes written in that were about the gender swap. The Rimmer looking at her tits and Kat asking about her nug-nugs. But they were obviously written in at a later date, when he knew what the casting was. So this script kind of feels even more dynamic than it might have been when he was writing for the show itself. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Rimmer goes into a tirade, and Lister blaming him for everything. And Lister says, bring on the gloop, because he's had enough of Rimmer. And again, the relationship bang on.
Just on that, so I remember making my notes for that, right, after the actual airing of it, and I just was like, I don't remember anything of what he said. He was just like, full on, just gloop me. I just went, Lister goes on a rant and wants to be glooped.
Yeah.
That's what I've got in my notes. Lister went on a rant and just wants to be glooped.
They hear a sound from the hull which suggests that it's getting closer and closer, and Lister tries to put a good spin on it, trying to take solace that the boys from the dwarf live on in other dimensions. Lister becomes gloop, and his last words are to call Rimmer a smeghead. Crichton becomes gloop, apologising that tea will be late. Cat becomes gloop, complaining that Grey isn't stylish. And Rimmer rejoices that she's the last living thing in the universe, moments before she gloops too. And again, going back to my call out to the person running the Zoom call, bamfing people out of the call as they glooped was great and added to the atmosphere.
That was particularly a great moment. It was. That was a particularly good moment, because it was done, like, with precision timing of just waiting and going, bang, done. Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, like we might be on a call now and go, right, okay, Mark, I'll see you later. And then, you know, you've got, like, 5 seconds trying to find the end button.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, dodgy. This was all, like, bang, click, done.
12 months of Zoom bollocks, and I couldn't do that.
Yeah. I probably couldn't either, to be fair. I mean, I haven't done that many Zoom calls, because mine are on a different platform. I've only started doing Zoom recently. But the one thing I did want to touch upon, though, with the glooping, it wasn't necessarily the glooping. Just before that was when Crichton was dismantling herself. And she says it's a mechanoid thing, but she says it in the Crichton season 7. It's a mechanoid thing! And I said that Crichton's my favourite character. I absolutely howled with laughter when she said that.
Yeah.
It's just like, it was perfect. You know, it's a mechanoid thing!
He was brilliant. They were all brilliant. They all just got the characters.
The thing is, as well, in this script as well, it just says shrugs. It's a mechanoid thing. So she's put that in there. She's developed that.
She's done what the cast might have done with their lines themselves. That's pretty advanced stuff. But I'm probably over-egging this point, but I just love that worked perfectly well in exactly the same way with a woman as it did with a man.
And absolutely.
Great. So the episode ends with the gloop consuming Starbug and the gloop consuming the screen, and some special closing titles that gives everyone the credit that they deserve.
Well done.
I would like to see this converted to an animated thing or a comic book or something, because it is so much better than it had any fucking right to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, we saw it live. We can say that. You know, we were there. Yeah. It was great. We enjoyed it. It was fun. I'd like to see some form of it again in the future. We've got the script here. It's fantastic. Mm. You know, so it's, you know, it'll be ever be in Red Dwarf lore now. Whether or not it ever gets released is another matter. But, you know, as you say, if it came in some sort of animated form, you know, that'd be great. Mm. You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility, because there's some great animators out there. There's some great comic book drawers out there who like Red Dwarf.
Artists. Drawers.
Artists. That's drawers.
Drawers. That's,
drawers. Sorry, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm trying to sound intelligent and it's not working. Some drawers. But yeah, I'm sure somebody could pull this together.
Somebody could do a draw of it.
They could do a draw of it and put it in a season six aesthetic. There you go. There's a word for you. Aesthetic.
That's a good word, aesthetic. I've got a couple of things I want to talk about before we wrap up. Over 50 people applied for parts, and that's ludicrous. I would not be brave enough to do that. And 50 people wanted to give this a go. So, you know, the five cast members that did get a part should be so fucking proud. And
yeah,
they absolutely deserved it, because they were all outstanding.
They were.
Now, I'm not sure whether it's potentially disappeared by the time we this episode airs, but the original script signed by Rob Grant and Ed By and I think Paul Jackson was going to go on eBay for charity. So if that is still there, you might be able to bid for it. Mm. And if you do download the script, the charity was the Trussell Trust for
that's right,
Hollyhop 2021. So if you enjoy the script, chuck a quid to Trussell Trust as well, I reckon.
Yeah, I would absolutely back that up.
Kurt, you got anything else you want to talk about?
No, I've done all my drawings for now.
You're doing a draw?
I've done a draw. I'm not good at draw.
You're not doing it.
I always remember just one thing. I always remember as a kid going to the art lessons, and I remember tracing a Sonic the Hedgehog, because I'm Team Sonic. And I got, like, the art teacher said that I've got a gift. And I was like, no, I haven't, lass.
Brilliant.
The only things I used to draw was the Starship Enterprise D. I used to draw that all the time.
Such a nerd.
And I used to draw Sonic the Hedgehog. Those are the only two things that I could physically draw or have a half an attempt at.
I was bloody awful. I love art because I can't do it. I love athletics because I can't do it. You know, anything that I can't do, if someone can do something cool that I can't do, that's what I want to watch. And I guess I can't write as well as Red Dwarf, so that's why I've probably enjoyed this.
fair dues. But you can podcast, that's good.
I can definitely do that. Talking about that, before we go, Kurt, tell everybody where they can find you on the internet.
On Twitter at rmuldrake, rmuldrake. On the Xcast, the X-Files podcast, at the X_cast on Twitter. On Millennium, the TV show Millennium, The Time Is Now is the podcast, and you can find that at The Time Is Now pod. Star Trek Picard, you can find that at Make It So, which is at Jean-Luc Podard, and various other TV shows. Podcast 616, which we were talking about off air, actually, where we've covered WandaVision, and we will go into the next show, which is the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which I won't be on, but the network are starting to do all of the Marvel stuff, and I was happy enough to come on to do to open it up with WandaVision. So I'm on the 8 of the 9 episodes there. Wasn't on this one of the episodes because I don't know if you know, Mark, but there was some sort of event on that we might have gone to.
Was there? Did it have a really good audio drama?
It had a really good audio drama, and there was like some really good young actors on there, and they'd read some sort of script.
Cool.
Yeah.
You can find me at MarkAdamsHC on Twitter and Instagram. I do a lot of podcasts too. Very recently launched is Ink Stories, at Ink Stories Pod on Twitter and Instagram. That is a short form podcast where I get a different guest each time to tell me a story behind their favourite tattoo. Next up is Writing the Childhood at RITCpod on Twitter, where me and my friend Fraser have a discussion about kids' TV from our childhoods, but the gimmick is that we've got quite a bit of an age difference between us, so we've not seen either of each other's stuff. The other one I do is Life's Milestones, which is a podcast based around my job as a humanist celebrant, at Life's Milestones on Twitter. I've got too many podcasts.
Yeah, same here.
So, thank you for joining us for this special episode of Shipwrecked and Comatose, and until next time...
Is that bad? Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you just listened to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling. Elsewhere on We Made This. Frame to Frame.
I mean, 2 years after he starred in this, Keanu Reeves became an action star with Point Break. It was only 2 years after this film.
Yeah, but Point Break is extremely camp.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely overblown and extremely over the top. So Point Break is basically a homoerotic movie about surfers mixed in with a heist movie. So, you know, when you... I can see the lineage between them.
Yeah, so you're saying so there is a connection in tone between that and the sort of exaggerated style of Bill and Ted. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Like, that's what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it in better words.
Well, there are words on it. I didn't use bodacious, so I didn't get away with it. But...
Cerebral Jukebox.
I always like to draw from just as many different influences as possible, you know, just like... And that's just my taste, you know, I just like, you know, and I'm sure that's true of everybody really, but yeah, you know, like, so one minute I'll be listening to an opera aria, and next I'll be listening to a Timmy Mallet or something, you know? I don't really like Timmy Mallet, but I was just trying to...
I was going to say, have you got any sort of dark pop secrets, but you may have just given yourself away then.
Life's Milestones.
I wanted to be a rapper called Razor.
Nice.
Yeah, because my tongue was sharp like a razor, you see. Clever, right?
Can I call you Razor?
Yeah, I mean, if you want. I've been called much worse. Obviously, I spelt it incorrectly because rappers don't like to spell things right. So it was R-A-Y-Z-A because...
Nice.
Why? Because my tongue's sharp like a razor.
I think that spelling as well almost emphasises the Midlands pronunciation, razor.
Razor? Yeah, oh God, yeah. Oh wow, yeah, I couldn't even escape it in my alter ego.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.